I suspect every preacher has a degree of plagiarism in some degree or another. And I've not plagiarised the idea, but I've developed it slightly. And as this is an informal service, or that's what we sometimes say it might be, then I thought, well, I'll have some visual aids this evening. I usually like to preach with visual aids, but on the four or five occasions I've preached here, I've never used them. So this could be the last occasion I preach, but on the other hand, I'm going to persist. We're dealing, of course, with a psalm, aren't we? And we have to recognise that psalms are full of picture language. We've already established in our previous series here, these are psalms which were used as they ascended up towards Jerusalem. This one, of course, doesn't fall into the category of the others. It's not Davidic in that sort of sense. It has no title above it. No one quite knows the writer. But, of course, he's going up to Jerusalem. And I'm going to sort of take you on that journey this evening. And we're going to begin in the middle of the psalm, which may just be the key to the psalm. And as they journey up to Jerusalem, they cannot ignore the fact that everywhere they look, everywhere they go, they are surrounded by evil. That's the gist of the psalm. He's telling us we cannot escape the evil world in which we live. We'll just use three of these for now. But we can see, of course, that evil comes in various shapes and sizes. It's not the same, is it? And that's the psalmist. Wherever he looks, he sees evil. He cannot avoid it. And he even says, of course, it seems to be ruling. It seems to be in charge. It seems to have the upper hand. And in his picture language, it says that evil has a scepter. It rules. It reigns. Wherever I look, I see evil. And I suppose, in a sense, everywhere we look, we see evil. We cannot avoid it. We live in an evil world, a world where evil seems to reign. If you still take a newspaper tomorrow morning, you'll read headlines of evil. If you watch television news, you will hear and see pictures of evil. In our modern world, on our iPhones and laptops, we will see pictures of evil. Evil seems to be reigning in the world in which we live. We cannot escape it. It's there for everyone to see. That, of course, is the picture that God saw in the days of Noah. He looked around, and what could he see? Nothing but evil. Unlike God, as we look around today, we can see nothing but evil. And we need to perhaps have a definition of evil, because for us sometimes we sort of see it as associated with those atrocities of the world. But I think in God's mind and in God's understanding, evil is that which is not good. It's the opposite of good. We speak about good and evil. When God created the world, he stood back, rested, and said, "Everything I've created is good." But of course, it wasn't long, was it, before Adam and Eve turned the goodness of God's creation into evil. We don't like that word. If we speak about something as being evil, then there's criticism. We find ourselves being accused of being intolerant. But of course, Jesus looked at the crowds in his day and he said to them, "It's evil, evil." He addressed those people who were the religious leaders and described them as being nothing more than good people on the outside but corrupt on the inside. Again, in picture language, he speaks about being whitewashed tombs. Evil is everywhere. And we have to contend with that, don't we? Owen mentioned Robin Oakes. I'm not going to spoil his visit, but I met him many, many years ago when he was still a young constable working in Soho. He came to speak to a young people's group, and I think they were much more educated at the end about the events happening in Soho than they were at the beginning. But he was there in the midst of the strip clubs and the other issues surrounding. He couldn't avoid it. There he was as a young constable. We are surrounded by it. We cannot avoid it. We see it, do we not, in our workplaces. There's the falsehood. There's the exploitation. There's the injustice, perhaps. There's that abuse of power. There's economic exploitation. We see people worshipping idols in all shapes and forms. There's murder, there's theft. We're confronted by false religion, blasphemy, crime, unbelief. There we are. And of course, there's always the temptation for these people going up to Jerusalem to worship, that they might be tempted to turn their hands to evil. The scepter of the wicked will not remain, and we'll discuss it in a moment, over the land allotted for the righteous, for then the righteous might use their hands to do evil. If evil reigns, why should we not then become involved in it? If that seems to be what's profiting the world, if that seems to be the world in which we live, why don't we just turn our hands to evil for our own benefit, for our own good, perhaps? But you see, the psalmist is highlighting that the people going up to worship are righteous people, faithful people, those who have trust in God. But we mustn't turn our backs, must we, on those things and those principles that belong to God. Evil will not reign forever, says the psalmist. But there's often temptation, is there not, for us to turn our hands away from God, as it were, and not do the good things, but the bad things. Paul has to deal with that, doesn't he? He tells us those Christians not to be conformed to this world. So easy, is it not, in a world like this, to conform, to compromise, to adapt, to do those things that we know are wrong. But there are things that we should be doing, isn't there? We are in a corrupt world. And we have to speak out sometimes against the corruption that we see. We have to be salt and light in a corrupt world. Jesus consistently drew his hearers' attention to the corruption all around them. He spoke out. We need to speak out about that. But equally, I think we need to recognize there's action that we need to take. No good just speaking out against it. We have to do something as well. We need to get involved. Not in the evil itself. But we need to, as it were, interact with those who are evil in an evil world. We visited our son when he was in New Zealand working. And we took the opportunity to visit various parts of New Zealand on our way down to Wellington where he was working. But anybody that knows us while we're on holiday, rain is our main event. And for 3 days we couldn't leave the bed and breakfast that we were in because the rain was just too heavy. And we had to read and we watched the rain come up from the little stream at the bottom of the garden, getting nearer and nearer to our bedroom door on the ground floor. And we read, and I read all my books. So I had to buy a new book to read on my journey back. And fortunately, in Wellington, there was a Christian bookshop, and I went in and I bought a book, Grace, Grit and Gumption. It's about a Christian work in South Wales. We'll keep the story as short as we can, but here were people, of course, witnessing all the corruption, the prostitution of the docks in South Wales. People were raising up their hands in horror. We've got to do something here. And eventually one of the ministers just said to the group of ladies, when were you last in a brothel? Most of them put their hands up in horror. But of course he was just making the point, no good standing from a distance if we want to be salt and light in a dark world. We need to go where the darkness is, to radiate the light and to sprinkle the salt. We live in an evil world. We cannot escape it, but we have some responsibilities there. Let's go back then to verse 1. Back to verse 1. And that reminds us, of course, that we are people now on our way to worship. We're going to worship in Zion itself. We're going to Zion. If the people were looking around in verse 3, now they're looking ahead. They're making their way towards Jerusalem. I haven't really got the setup quite right for this evening, but nevertheless. And what did they see? They saw the hill of Zion itself. And as they approached Zion, there was the hill. There was the hill. It was a mountain, but they couldn't see Zion itself because historians and geographers tell us the small city as it would have been at that time was always hidden down behind the hills in a sort of saucer shape. But they could see the hills there, and they were making their way to Jerusalem, and they were going to worship God. They were going to praise him. They were going to bring, as it were, their honour and glory to him. And they were the faithful ones. They were the ones who were going to worship. They were making their way there. They were not going to become contaminated by the things of this world. They wanted, as it were, to be faithful worshippers. And the psalmist just reminds them that those who trust in the Lord will not be shaken because they have Mount Zion. They have Mount Zion. Our reading from the psalm, our hymns are reminded that, isn't it? It was these people who were faithful, those who were going to Jerusalem to worship. It was those who could claim that they'd got the security of Zion itself. They were going to the place, the holy place, where they could meet with God. God had assigned Zion to be the place where he would meet with his people, and they could meet with him. It was God's holy mountain, a place where God dwells. Those of us this evening who fall into the category of being righteous and faithful, those who have come to this God, not to a Zion perhaps, but perhaps to a cross, and we found ourselves there as the sinful, evil people that we are, but we recognize that Christ died for us. He paid the penalties of our evil. He has destroyed Satan, the devil, and evil. And as we come this evening into this building, as a group of people, we can have the same hope that these people had. Not in the physical structures, because we know that Jerusalem was destroyed on several occasions. But in a spiritual sense, these people could trust in the God who dwelt in Zion. The God who now, as it were, dwells in us. The God who dwells in us. We are God's people, faithful and true. A people who trust in Him for salvation. There's a sense in which, you see, we carry around with us on a day-to-day basis this wall of Zion, these hills of Zion. That's what it says. As the mountain surrounds Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds His people, both now and forever. We are people who have the security of God now and forever. That doesn't mean that we don't face issues. That doesn't mean that we might, as it were, discover that this life is hard and difficult and there are issues that we need to face. But like Paul, when those issues come, we know where our hope is. No one suffered more than Paul. He lists the things he endured. But at the end, of course, he was faithful, righteous, because God was his Saviour. And he could understand this psalm that it surrounds him. Not in a physical sense, but in a spiritual sense, we can know that God surrounds us, protects us, and cares for us. Jesus changes the picture and speaks about us being in God's hand. And nothing is going to take us out of that hand. Nothing can take us out of the grasp that God has on us. Our eternal hope is assured. Our eternal destiny through this pilgrimage is assured. We have a hope that is steadfast and sure. One commentator suggests that what we have is a mobile fort. I'm not certain that perhaps we want to see it in that way, but we understand what he's suggesting. As we move around, so the protection of the hills of Jerusalem go with us. We are protected. So the people looked around and they saw evil. The people looked ahead, and what did they see? They saw Zion and the hills and God's protection. But perhaps as the people are making their way home from Jerusalem, they now look above. And what do they see? They see God in his throne. And now they want to worship him and bring him their praise and their prayers. Lord, do good to those who are good, to those who are upright in heart. But to those who turn to crooked ways, the Lord will banish with the evildoers. Peace be on Israel. There's a sense in which this prayer really just asks God to be God. He's the God of mercy. And he will show his mercy. In that sense, to those who do good, not in the sense that we understand it, but to those who are motivated out of their Christian convictions, out of their trustworthiness of God and their faithfulness to Him, He will honour them. He will do good to those who are upright in heart. That I suggest is the saints that Paul addresses so frequently at the beginning of his letters. Those of us who have come to a cross and have found there the forgiveness of God. But to those who've turned to crooked ways, the Lord will banish and do evil. The other side of the coin of God's mercy, a God of justice, a God of judgment. In the end, the evildoers will be banished, and the evil of this world will be banished. Satan and the evil that he promotes will no longer have any effect. For those, of course, who are doing the course on Revelation, they will come to the end and they will see that Satan is defeated. He might have power now, but as that Psalm 93 reminded us, God reigns. And as one commentator of a very small book on Revelation reminds us, the Lamb wins in the end. The one that died upon a cross as the sacrifice for sin reminds us that he wins. He wins. Our hope is not in this world, but in a world to come. We stand assured that God is our rock and our salvation. I've spoken about the church in Ludlow before that we visited as a family that was covered in graffiti. Our daughter didn't want to go into it. We went there because I knew the father of the then minister. But what I didn't know until we arrived and went in, that was the week he'd been diagnosed with terminal cancer. He had the opportunity to actually write about that and to broadcast that. Philip Hayden was able to make 4 broadcasts before he went into glory. He was able to make a broadcast about God being his rock. He was able to make a broadcast about God being his refuge. He was able to make a broadcast about God being his rest. He was looking for a 4th R, really, but God was his refreshment. My friends, we can be assured this evening, if we're faithful, if we're righteous in the biblical context, that we can arrive safely in our new home, and our journey there was protected, because God is our rock, God is our refuge. He will then give us rest, and in heaven we'll enjoy the refreshment that he brings. The psalmists in many ways were able to express their hope and their trust in God, none more so than David as the writer of Psalm 23. And we're going to sing the popular or modern paraphrase of that now.